Hi, it's Jeff. Welcome back to this masterclass on building your limitless mind. We're in Chapter 9, Evolutionary Tools. And this may be the entire game. This may be what it means to be limitless. And by that, I don't even know what I mean. Because what I would say is, what are us humans here to do but evolve? As we talked about earlier, we talk about the theory of evolution like it's done. Dinosaurs existed for 165 million years. As far as we can tell, us humans have been around a few thousand years. Right? We talk about that we've evolved into what? Into Homo sapiens? I remember years ago in a book on the singularity seeing this cartoon that showed a series of steps up. And it showed an ape to a Neanderthal to the human. And then the caption at the bottom was something like, what, you didn't think there were any more stairs above that? While evolution is often thought about in the context of physical evolution, how we supposedly evolved from fish crawling from the muck to apes swinging from the trees to humans who invented the wheel. And these modern societies, it's seen as a physical thing. Whereas you can also look at it as a mental thing. That supposedly the massive difference between us and the apes and the massive unexplained leap from other sapiens to us in terms of brain size and brain capacity and cognitive function, that evolution has always been a mental thing. And so if we're always evolving, and we aren't fully evolved, but we're constantly evolving from what we are now. How are we doing this? What does it even mean to evolve? One might even assert that us humans are devolving. Maybe if we use the definitions of limited versus limitless thinking, are we thinking more limitless or more limited? How many people suffer from the big two? How many people live in worry, in fear, in insecurity? Are we evolving beyond those old patterns? Is technology aiding us or reinforcing these ways of being? It is well known that Facebook makes people less happy. Okay, so why are we all over it? It's like cigarette smoking. Even after they put a warning, this product absolutely certainly kills you, people still smoke. So are we evolving or are we devolving? Into a machine that is so easily manipulated by a smiley face on a computer screen. If you listen to the rhetoric from Silicon Valley, it's all about the singularity. Just today I saw another marketing piece promoting 20 years from now we're going to have chips in our head where you will be so super quote-unquote intelligent that even just by thinking a question, your brain will be able to go onto the internet and get you an answer. Yay! Wow! That's our definition of intelligence. It feels like reverting back to primary school. What's the capital of Portugal? Lisbon. What's 2 times 2? 4. That our definition of intelligence will be we can access information online just by thinking about it. What I didn't see in the article was that the top sites online are news sites, which are obviously propaganda, if not straight up fake, and porn sites. So said differently, our definition of evolving will be you have a chip in your head where you can surf the web and go hear the propaganda all the time at will and surf porn sites. Wow. This is our definition of evolving. What are the other definitions from the singularity, from transhumanism? Right, there's all these weirdo definitions about putting chips in ourselves, yet if you talk to those boffins about actually training the mind, about actually evolving your mental capacity, you realize that they've basically given it little thought. The other cool part of their evolution is using drugs, like microdosing. That's the cool thing in Silicon Valley. You don't need just a brain interface to surf porn. You need to microdose. Why? Why? What does it do in the brain? Do they even know? Have they given it 1 minute of thought? Right, we all know that Ritalin, or the amphetamine known as speed, is really good for certain things in the brain, for certain things. Is it sustainable? Is it even valuable? Maybe it unlocks something or teaches you something, but it's only a tool. See, one of my views and experiences is that drugs and alcohol can be the doorway to showing you the limitless capabilities of your mind, but they're only a tool. And unless you can actually use that tool and train yourself to do what the drug does, you're devolving. See, this is one of the stories in the movie Limitless, right? By the end of the movie, he has to have evolved beyond the pill to be able to do it in his own mind. Either his brain has rewired itself, or he somehow trained himself to mimic what it does in his mind. This to me is human evolution. And this is what the evolutionary tools are built to do. If the continuous tools and the daily tools are like hitting the gym to get in great shape, the evolutionary tools are for becoming like Arnie, a true master of the universe. I'm sure you're familiar with the concept of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. He steps up the pyramid escalate from basic human needs to overcoming human frailties like physical and emotional needs. To the top of the pyramid, his notion of self-actualization. Well, my view is the evolutionary tools are designed to take you far beyond his limited pyramid. In fact, over the years, I had this five-level scale come to me in terms of evolving human thinking. At level one, we're only thinking about basic topics. It's basic survival. How do you get through the day? At level two, you've evolved beyond that to the point where you can think about how do you get a better job? How do you create a better life? At level three, you've mastered the material world. That might include all the way up to someone like Warren Buffett. You've got all the money you could need, or you've got a lot of success, and you get a choice here. Do you stay stuck at this basic level of human evolution, thinking about more money or more success or a nicer house or your private plane or whatever? Or do you evolve to level four? Level four is basically where we began at the start of this program. At level four, you recognize, life isn't about all that stuff, is it? Oh my gosh, that stuff doesn't even lead to anything. That's just a feeling in the body. You can feel like you've got that new house without actually having it. And you start to open the doors to seeing mind create so much more matter than we know. At level five, you're living here. You're bringing it all together. So you're operating on the level of mind where you're constantly evolving your mind. But you're not living outside of the material world. This is why I think the Eastern path is a false path. Sitting in a monastery behind your closed doors meditating all day may be a valid path for them, but I don't perceive it to be a valid path for human evolution. The valid path I perceive at level five is you're doing both. You're constantly evolving mind, and you're constantly evolving your life with it, creating this cycle of mind and actions, evolving your thinking while at the same time bringing it back to your actions. Again, I'm not proposing that I'm right, I don't know. This is just a scale that came to me. Yet what comes with this scale is a notion that's so powerful to me. How do you constantly evolve? So you're in the material world, and you're in the world of mind, and you're constantly seeking ways to improve the way you integrate how you think with how you operate in the world, to the point that it's seamless. And a visualization I would give you for this is the yin-yang. These two energies perpetually moving together, mind and actions, mind and physical, perpetually moving together in this seamless cycle, where you're constantly honoring both in this never-ending process of evolution. And this may be the ultimate definition of limitless, or I may be wrong. But it's a scale that comes to me, and it's a scale I think about all the time. If you've evolved your thinking to the level 3 and you think it's all about the material world and then you die, I think you've failed at life. I think you missed the point of life because you haven't evolved. And if you only sit in a monastery evolving your mind, have you had a physical experience? Are we here to have a spiritual experience? Or are we here to bring spiritual to matter, to spiritualize matter? I don't know. But that's why, to me, this path of evolution comes back to how committed you are to evolving your mind, at the same time utilizing it in the world, evolving the world around you. This is just one man's view. All I know is that from evolving my own thinking over the years, ideas like this just come to me, and I share it with the greatest arrogance of proposing that it makes sense, but also the greatest humility saying, I don't know. All I know is that this path has become so important to me because these tools of evolving your mind are so powerful at transforming the way you perceive yourself and your life, that if this isn't part of your life, oh, I don't know. Have we done what we're here to do? If you believe that evolution is what we are, then how can you not be evolving every day? All right, enough of my theorizing. Now, of course, this is going to keep getting more and more woo-woo in this recording. And that's okay. If it's not for you, you shouldn't listen to it. But if you want to evolve beyond the meat and two veg, you want to get a little bit woo-woo, or a lot woo-woo. All right, so let's dive in and talk about the first evolutionary tools. And in the book, I group these together, hypnosis and NLP, or neuro-linguistic programming. Now, right off the bat, I will say, people see these as controversial tools. I understand that. Many people tell me they don't believe in hypnosis. One of my old friends is a medical doctor. He used to tell me all the time he didn't believe in hypnosis. And then in the same breath, he'd tell me about a story when he was in primary school that a hypnotist came to the school. He took a young girl out of the class and brought her up to the front of the auditorium. And he hypnotized her to be stiff as a board. And then he laid her across two chairs so that her head was at one end and her feet was at the other. And then he stood on her. And this medical doctor friend of mine said he doesn't believe in hypnosis, but when he was in school, he saw a hypnotist do this. This is hypnosis. And again, some people say, well, that sounds far-fetched. Go do some research on hypnosis. Actually, go and train hypnosis. The things that you will see will blow your mind. And that's just some of the physical demonstrations of it. See, and I won't go into detail about why this is and how it is, yet you just have to accept we're not conscious. We just think we're conscious. We like to believe that we're these smart, intelligent, conscious creatures. We are not. At any one point in time, you can have in your conscious mind 7 things. Whereas unconsciously, you're processing somewhere around 2 million to 2 billion bits of information. See, we think that we're conscious because what, we can remember a phone number? Yet every time we're trying to remember a phone number, everything else is stored unconsciously. Every other phone number you might remember. Well, your body's pumping blood, regulating its temperature, growing your hair. All these things are happening unconsciously in us. We talk about habit change. There's a quote at the start of this chapter by Matt Damon. I should have done it years ago. It's amazing. I didn't even want cigarettes anymore. That was a quote by him on using hypnosis to stop smoking. Of course, I'm well aware that many people don't believe in hypnosis. Yet most hypnotherapists, they make their money on weight loss and stop smoking. Why? Because it's basically 100% effective. Right? It's 100% effective because it works. These habits are unconscious habits. And the hypnosis is working with the unconscious mind directly. It's not trying to go there with the conscious mind. It's doing it directly. And that's why these tools are so powerful. Because we are unconscious. We just think we're conscious. And tools of hypnosis are about going to the core of what we are and making change directly. A very famous leader in the field of hypnosis, George Estabrooks, Harvard graduate, Rhodes Scholar, chairman of the Department of Psychology at Colgate University, wrote in his groundbreaking book in 1959, Hypnotism, "Many parents who would not hesitate to have their children's tonsils out tomorrow would be horrified if the doctor suggested using hypnotism to cure, shall so we say, nail biting." So of course it's true that hypnosis for many, many decades has had skepticism and a soiled reputation, and that's okay. Because if you want to try it for yourself, you can learn the power of it, like Matt Damon. And how might you use it as an evolutionary tool? How might you not? Everything that we've covered in here, in stopping limited thinking, getting rid of worry, getting rid of fears, getting rid of insecurity, depression, anxiety. What are the solutions that our mainstream medical offers? Talk therapy. For the rest of your life, you can talk to a depressed therapist about being depressed. Or you can pop your little anti-anxiety pill to get through the day. Or you can actually harness tools like hypnosis to actually train your mind. Focus. Right, ADHD pills. Well, do any of those kids suffer ADHD when they're playing video games? Do they really suffer a lack of focus? How might you take that skill of focus they already have and apply it to something that's more boring, like school? It is simply training the brain. And hypnosis is a very, very powerful tool for training the brain. Take every topic we talked about in limitless thinking, limitless motivation, limitless energy, limitless focus, limitless imagination, limitless you. All of these can be built much more rapidly with hypnosis. Skills development, you want to get great at golf quickly? Hypnosis. Skiing? Hypnosis. Because what you're doing is taking the tool, like mental rehearsal that we talked about, on steroids. Constantly giving your brain a process that enables it to become deeply ingrained in you. I'm not suggesting that it's as easy as Neo in the Matrix downloading Kung Fu, but it is the most advanced human technology that I've come across. And I will give you my disclaimer again. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not offering medical advice. If you've got these things in your mind, I suggest you give hypnosis a shot. But find every other solution that works for you. What about NLP? How does NLP fit into this? NLP was modeled in part off hypnosis. NLP is sometimes said a covert way to do hypnosis. Because you can make it seem like you're just doing steps in people's minds, but you're accessing the same sorts of processes that you access with hypnosis. And even though NLP is here as an evolutionary tool, I would suggest that NLP should be a very basic tool that we should all learn at the start of our lives. Think about this magical triangle. Thoughts lead to feelings, feelings lead to actions. It took me years to get that out of somewhere. And now it seems so obvious to me, but it took me years and years of reading to find that. And NLP didn't teach me that. NLP, though, has other powerful processes that resemble this. Like the notion that we have an external stimuli. Someone cuts you off on the street. That gives you an internal representation. The brain just runs a program like, screw you. That leads to an action. The finger goes up. And you see some of these sorts of things in behavioral psychology and other places. Yet what NLP does is bring it all together into very, very potent tools. You learn about things that operate in your brain. You can tell when people are creating pictures in their brain. You know the role that pictures play versus the auditory voice in your head versus feelings in the body. So it is an evolutionary tool in that it teaches you so much about who you are and what it means to be human. It enables you to much more easily manipulate your thoughts, feelings, and actions. So to me, it should be a very basic tool that we all learn. And then there's another very powerful aspect to NLP, and that's modeling excellence. If you want to know how someone does something excellently, in NLP, you can model that. and then train yourself to do it in the same ways. So how do you pick up these evolutionary tools? It's not easy. You can learn it somewhat from books, and I recommend that you do that. But if you're serious about learning these tools and evolving beyond the meat and two veg, I suggest going out and training with professionals. And there's plenty of hypnosis and NLP professionals out there. And this doesn't mean that you have to go and train with people for years. You can learn it very quickly, at least at a basic level, and be proficient at doing it for yourself. And if you want to go deeper, like all skills, there's a level of mastery that can take years and years and years to really develop skill at this. Yet just a little bit of this goes a long way in evolving your limitless mind. The second evolutionary tool is meditation. And if you've listened to me talk about meditation through here or otherwise, you might be mistaken in thinking that I think meditation is a wank. I think meditation is a very, very powerful tool. What I think is a wank is the meditation culture. And the way people talk about meditation is grotesque to me. With their little mantras and their Sanskrit words, and you have to sit a certain way, you have to have your special mantra, you have to dress a certain way. Maybe you really like the culture of it, great. I just wish that we could separate more the culture from the actual tool, because it is a very powerful tool. But again, it's been misrepresented in our society. It's talked about for stress relief or relaxation. It's promoted as 5 minutes a day of meditation. Like, that's going to do you any good. Again, it might sound good and it might pass the sniff test and you can go to a cocktail party and tell people that you meditate. But it is literally the equivalent of saying that you do one push-up a day and then giving yourself a pat on the back for it. In fact, someone said to me recently that he went to a meditation seminar and he really loved it, but he kind of walked away from there a little bit dismayed because he realized he didn't have 30 minutes a day to do it. And if he didn't have 30 minutes a day to do it, he recognized it would be of such little value to him. So does he need to find the time or whatnot? No, I taught him a tool that he can use all the time, because this is one of the mistakes of the meditation culture as well. They make it about meditation. It's about the way that you can practice meditation sitting and then bring it to the rest of your life. As I said earlier, it's like saying that a bench press is about going to the gym and lifting weight. No, it's not. It's about building physical muscle that you can use to lift any weight. You don't have to be on a bench press to exercise those muscles. And you don't have to be meditating to be using the mental muscles that meditation builds. So even though I can crap a little bit all over the world of meditation, the tool itself is extremely powerful, and there's something even more powerful about it. Meditation is the core training tool for learning you are not that thinking mind. You are not that feeling body. Just because the body feels a certain way doesn't mean that you have to feel it. Doesn't mean you have to think it. Because the body's feeling tired doesn't mean that I'm tired. The body's tired. Just because the head is having thoughts of fear doesn't mean I'm fearful. It means that the head is processing fearful thoughts. This notion in itself is a massive evolution for all of us. Because when you see you are not your thoughts, you are not your feelings, now you've evolved beyond the basic material needs of the body to be able to take metacognition to it, to be able to see you are not it, but you are a driver of it. Often you'll hear notions like the elephant and the rider. It's an elephant operating autonomously. You're a rider able to observe it and steer it in certain ways. I like the metaphor of seeing the body-mind machine like a vehicle. It's the vehicle that we're born into, but we are not the vehicle any more than you are your car. We're the driver of the vehicle and the vehicle. And when you can recognize the distinction and be able to move between these two positions, the driver and the machine and the driver, you have so many more ways of processing reality. You have so many more ways of taking ownership of your thoughts and feelings and directing the human body-mind machine. This is one reason why meditation is such a powerful teaching tool and part of this package of evolutionary tools. As I wrote in the book, I hate talking about meditation, hate talking about NLP and hypnosis. I hate having to try and convince neophytes that these are effective, so I simply don't do it. A question I put to people sometimes is, just ask anyone who is serious about meditation, and they will tell you that they will never go back to that old way of being. Anyone who gets serious about NLP or hypnosis or meditation would never go back to being that regular old way. And if you've only ever operated in the monkey mind, if you've only ever operated your human body-mind machine at a basic level, you have no idea what meditation is. Even if you've only explored it a little bit, you have no idea what it is. And because us humans love external validation, you don't need to hear it from me. Let's hear it from Steve Jobs. If you just sit and observe, you will see how restless your mind is. If you try to calm it, it only makes it worse. But over time, it goes calm. And when it does, there's room to hear more subtle things. That's when your intuition starts to blossom, and you start to see things more clearly and be in the present more. Your mind just starts to slow down, and you see a tremendous expanse in the moment. You see so much more than you could see before. It's a discipline. You have to practice it. Of course, you don't have to hear it from Jobs and many others to know that meditation is a very powerful tool. As I said earlier, unfortunately, the tool of meditation has been so confused with all of the Eastern culture and the talk about enlightenment and whatnot. But if you can get beyond that and just see it as a very powerful tool, it's very easy for you to convince yourself that it's worth experimenting with. Meditation often gets marketed as stress relief or relaxation, but if you get yourself into a daily practice for meditation, you realize it is a far more potent tool for training lots of things: success, top performance, happiness, self-mastery, self-actualization, and most certainly the very basic ideas of focus and concentration. As we've talked about now, society focus is one of these things that's somewhat strange. People are confused. Why do our kids have such trouble focusing? Why do our adults have such trouble focusing? Well, what are they actually doing to train focus? And meditation is a daily practice that has been done for thousands of years to train these types of human mental skills. But it's no silver bullet. You wouldn't expect to build strong biceps by doing one curl every day. And if you want to build the mental muscles through meditation, you want to dedicate yourself to a daily practice. There's lots of ways to get into meditation. Apps like Headspace are excellent to get you started. I used to experiment a lot with Vipassana meditation, which I recommend. I've played around a little bit with TM. These days, I don't meditate. I use more advanced tools of hypnosis and other tools that I've built over the years, which I perceive to give me more benefit. But as a starting point, I strongly suggest, if you haven't experimented with it, that at the very least you play around a little bit with the evolutionary tool of meditation. The next evolutionary tool that I want to share with you is a notion of training your awareness. And you can see in the book some thoughts on this tool, but what I want to do is actually walk you through an exercise. And what you'll experience is that this exercise is somewhat like a meditation in that it pulls you beyond the monkey mind. Except what's very simple and powerful in this exercise is that by training in on your awareness, you're not trying to clear the mind as much as you're just training yourself to focus in on your senses and pull beyond that mind, if you will. So let's play with this together. You want to practice this heightened state of awareness when you're in a place that you can deeply focus. Certainly, you want to avoid doing this while you're doing other important things like driving a car. And instead, just come back to this when you have a moment to just sit back and use your brain differently, experiencing your awareness fully. You can do this sitting down or standing up. I recommend doing it standing up. You're going to keep your eyes open. And the reason I recommend doing it standing up is because this isn't about training this with me right now. This is once you get this into your body, you can train this all the time. See, this is where meditators miss the point. It's not to show up at your little meditation class and use your little Sanskrit words while burning the incense. It's to build this tool so you can use it all the time. So now when you're ready, just stare at a point out in front of you, ideally above eye level. And I'm going to do this with you and you're going to hear it change in me, and keep staring at this point. That's it. You're just staring at this point as though you're looking at something all the way in the distance. Like standing at the top of a mountain, looking all the way out there. What is that that you see? Really straining the eyes, really looking out there. What is that that you're seeing? How much more detail can you see? That's it. Keep staring at this point. That's it. And as you keep staring at this point, you notice your eyes begin to strain and lose focus. And as they do, just allow them to relax. Keep looking at this point, but just allow your eyes to relax. So you're taking in more of the room. See more in your peripheries, up and down around you, experiencing more of your visual field with this diffuse vision. Now pay attention to your hearing. Really tune into your hearing. Notice the sound of my voice. And really pay careful attention. What are the other sounds that you hear around you? Outside of you? Inside of you, the sound of your breathing? Other sounds that are coming to mind? And you might lower your eyes now down to eye level. And just notice the way your breathing has changed. See more of the room. Or wherever you might be, hearing more of the sounds, noticing your breathing has shifted. Now begin to pay attention to your body. Notice those feet. They've been there all along, haven't they? But until you put your awareness here, you weren't paying attention to your hands. Feeling the body, noticing your breathing, still seeing more of the room around you, hearing the sounds. Now just notice inside of you a glowing ball of energy beginning to form. Feel it growing and growing inside, and now spreading outside of you. Into the room around you, or wherever you might be. And notice that ball of energy just reaching out and touching things. Imagining what it would feel like to touch these things. That's right. Just imagining this feeling now, inside. Noticing more of the room around you. Hearing the sounds, your breathing calm down, feeling what it's like to be connected to all these things around you in this heightened state of awareness, feeling your body, paying attention to the sounds. Vision diffuse. Just fully immersed in this moment. That's right. And you can see how you can do this anytime, anywhere, can't you? When you want to access this heightened way of being. But for now, just feel your body coming more alive. Shake it up a little bit. Shake the hands, move the eyes, change the hearing, and just notice the difference between where you are now and where you were just a few moments ago in this heightened state of awareness. And see that what meditation is trying to teach is that you can live here when you train yourself to directly access this heightened state of awareness. So what do you think of that? How do you feel? What do you notice? In this heightened state of awareness, you can feel that your senses are more tuned. Your mind is more calm. It's like an easy way to pull yourself into the present. And what I love about this training tool is that you can use it anytime, anywhere. It doesn't rely on sitting down and closing your eyes. That's why we do it eyes open. So that you can literally stop the world at will and tune into your senses and be far more aware. And that's the evolutionary tool of training your awareness. The next evolutionary tool I want to share with you is directly training your brainwaves. Now, if you go online and you type in brainwave entrainment, you'll see a lot of information, some of it positive, some of it negative. And what I would suggest is that if you want to explore these sorts of tools, you have to do the research for yourself. Even meditation, there's as much disinformation out there as there is positive information. Scientists are still hooking up meditators to their little devices, measuring stuff, trying to figure out is it valid or not. But anyone who's spent 2 hours meditating knows what it does in your mind. And herein in the scientific research as well is another obvious point. When they hook up meditators to EEGs, and they measure their brainwaves, what do they learn? That meditators are able to put themselves into a different brainwave state, a different brainwave frequency. Now, I want to step back and give you my medical disclaimer again. I'm not a medical scientist. I'm not a researcher into brainwave frequencies. But I will share with you that in researching these topics for a long time, I've discovered if you go direct to the source, meaning the source being the brain, and you train the brain directly, you experience different results. And training the brain with binaural beats, I can't claim has any medical benefit. I do not know. What I do know is I've done it for years and years and years and years. Many of those days, most of the day, sitting, working away with binaural beats just playing in my ears, or more sophisticated versions of binaural beats. Every one of the recordings that I talk to you about that I listen to for conditioning my mind has a binaural beat backing track. I can't tell you whether it works. I can just tell you that for my experience, it's been worth trying and been worth doing over and over and over again. Without going into detail in this, you don't need to know anything about brainwave frequencies to have heard that the brain moves in different frequencies throughout the day and night. We've all heard that the brain goes into delta brainwave frequency in deep sleep, or that meditators are in a theta state. Some of us are aware that the alpha state, the more calm, focused state, is equated to the flow state in top athletes. Athletes in the zone, in flow, are said to be in this alpha state. And then what is there? Beta! Beta! Ah! Beta is the normal place for us humans, the monkey mind. It's called beta for a reason, because it's beta. And when you train to meditate, what happens? Your brainwaves alter. You get less beta and frenetic and anxious and monkey mind, and more like alpha. More like theta. and I can't prove this to you, but you can prove it to yourself by training it. For years when I meditated, I used an EEG to measure my brainwaves, and I saw it very, very directly. But I stopped all that. I didn't need to prove it to myself that it worked. I just listened to them over and over again and feel it work. And there's two levels to this evolutionary tool. The basic level is the one we've been talking about. Top performance. If you can get your brain into more alpha and theta states, you're more effective, period. Meditation is a tool to get there. Directly going to the source and training the brainwaves is an even more effective way to get there. Do binaural beats work? Unclear. What I do know is if they do work, if brainwave entrainment does work, it seems to require a massive, massive amount of time. And that's why I've listened to binaural beats hours a day for years. Sometimes 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 hours a day for years. And I've noticed the difference. What is the meditative state that is the difference? It's calm, relaxed, alert state. And maybe from my voice, you wouldn't think I'm in that, but I am. I'm in the flow. If I measured my EEG right now, I know I'm in an alpha state. And you want to be more in alpha as well. This is the basic level of directly training your brainwaves. But there's another more advanced level. And it's much more woo-woo. And I like woo-woo, and I know you like woo-woo. But if you go and study out-of-body experiences, if you look into the Monroe Institute, what you discover is that over decades, they've trained some 40, 50,000 people in traveling beyond the body. Yes, I know this sounds wildly out there, but you know that billions of people on our planet believe in heaven. Maybe another billion or two more believe in reincarnation and other such Eastern ideas. But what does it actually mean? See, it's one thing to show up at church on Sunday or to do your little meditation class and point your thumb and forefinger to the sky and think that you're having a spiritual experience. And it's another thing altogether to live and breathe it. To know that there is something marvelous and mysterious about our reality and to want to explore it. Out-of-body training at the Monroe Institute, and certainly remote viewing with American hero Joe McMonagle, might be the most evolutionary experiences that I've ever had. Although I say that, then my brain is actually putting aside mushrooms. Again, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not suggesting you go and do mushrooms. I am suggesting, though, that like Steve Jobs and Timothy Leary and all these other folks, that there's something that alters in the brain that we can access this different type of reality. And if you've never done these sorts of things, you've never experienced them, you've never even tried, how can you know? Remote viewing, out-of-body training is the most fascinating training I've done. And it comes back to brainwave frequencies. Robert Monroe, when he discovered this notion of floating outside of his body, what used to be called astral projection, started to research it. And over decades, he built tools to train other people to do it. And what are these tools? They are all about altering your brainwave frequency. If you dig into the esoteric literature, if you come back even to the notion of high vibrational energy we talked about from Napoleon Hill, all of the stuff that gets branded basically as the law of attraction, Hermetic philosophy, the mystery schools, Eastern philosophy, the religious schools, they all say the same thing. This reality is energy, and it's energy and vibration. This machine that sits inside our heads accesses this energy in some way with its own vibration. Altering your brainwave frequency is the direct way to hack the machine. To alter the way that you experience vibration, to change the vibration of the machine, and to change your reality. Gain, you hear the way I'm describing all of these tools. I'm coming at them from a perspective of I recognize people are skeptical, and you should be. I was once skeptical too. But after spending 20 years investigating these topics, I've been led to the evolutionary tools. And over and over and over again, my brain tells me keep training them. Keep evolving. It may be the only reason that we are here, to evolve the mind. And until you pick up some of these tools and play around with them for yourself, you will never know. And you can live like the regular folks in beta. Right, they're in beta. Are they ever going to graduate? Or are they always going to live in beta? And if you train your brainwaves, you can live more in alpha, in the flow state. We talked about the flow state might be the greatest state for human excellence, human performance, human happiness. You can go even deeper to the theta state. You can train yourself to rewire the brain in theta. Hypnosis, meditation, these advanced tools are happening in theta. And if you really want to evolve and really want to explore, you can vibrate the machine to the point that you can leave it and have an out-of-body experience. You want to talk about evolution? When you have these sorts of experiences, you will never go back. When you've had an out-of-body experience, you can never look at the quote-unquote real world the same again. You want to talk about choosing your thinking? Getting rid of fear, getting rid of worry, getting rid of insecurity? When you know what reality really is and you experience it differently, how could you ever be fearful again? If you truly believe in heaven, rather than just go to church and pray for it, if you truly believe in heaven, how could you ever have a fear of death? Period. Period. How could you ever be afraid of death if you truly believe in heaven? And when you've had these experiences, when you've evolved beyond the meat and two veg, you experience reality entirely differently. And what is more limitless than being able to evolve your thinking beyond the obvious ways of experiencing reality? To experience reality is more limitless. This is only possible when you unleash your mind. You unlock your potential using these or other evolutionary tools. Now, this brings us to the end of the track on the evolutionary tools and to the end of part two on the performance tools. In the next track, we're going to be talking about part three to the system for building your limitless mind, developing your training program.